So welcome back to Two Crees in a Pod. We are in season 6, episode 4, and we're calling this series Stories from the North. And so we have two wonderful folks with us. We have Jonas and Zachary. And so we're going to ask both of these folks to introduce themselves first, and then we're going to have some really cool conversation, I feel. So we'll get right into it, Zachary.
Awesome. Ait Squail, Aikwana Silam Nala, Entha Zach Myers, Tinitsnuk the Kaniqua. Good day. It's good to see you all. I guess all you online too. My name is Zachary Myers. I come from the Fort Nelson First Nation, which is traditionally known as the Kaniqua. The Kaniqua translates to people of the Rocky Rivers and Dene South Slavey. That's my mother tongue. So I'm Dene First Nations on my mother's side, and I come from Treaty 8 territory. It's westernly known as Fort Nelson, British Columbia. We are a Dene and Cree and mixed blood and non-status and Métis community. And I currently reside on the unceded territories of the Kwikwetlem and the Tsleil-Waututh Nations, which is westernly known as Port Moody, British Columbia. And the reason why I reside there is because it is safe. I identify as a Two-Spirit Indigiqueer, which I can talk to you more about in this interview. But yeah, so my pronouns are he, him, they, and it. And there's a bit of a story that goes along with the word it. It's this idea that prior to contact, there were gender non-binary pronouns of like it and they. So like when my grandma, when she was still with us, her nickname was Auntie Biz, and she was really good at bingo player in Fort Nelson, and she was a language teacher for more than 35 years. I sat with her when I came out as Two-Spirit in around 2016, when I got my Bachelor's of Education degree, and I had asked Grandma, what did gender and sexuality look like in the bush before we were colonized? And then I told her, I said, I identify as Two-Spirit. And she kind of giggled. She's like, what the heck is that? Because we don't have an actual translation of being Two-Spirit in our Dene South Slavey dialect, but we do have pronouns they and it. And it was this idea that you had Indigenous names and your Indigenous name identified what your role was in community. It wasn't what was on your chest or between your legs. It was more about, you know, the skills that you had as an individual, as a human. So that's my long-winded Indigenous introduction from my mother's side. I also want to acknowledge that I'm third-generation settler Canadian on my father's side. So I'm Irish, Norwegian, French, German, a whole Heinz 57 Euro Canadian. I do acknowledge that, you know, I do as a settler Canadian person on my dad's side have a role to play in truth and reconciliation here in Canada. And yeah, so I'm the Zach of all trades. I kind of do everything. I'm an educator. I'm a storyteller. I work in film in the Lower Mainland in Vancouver area, and just very blessed to be in this space with all of you today. So that's a little bit about me.
How fun. It's really, really good to hear you speak and to learn about you. My name is Jonas Brun Arnesen. I'm Nori Sami and Yolov Sami. I've started taking back the traditions. I grew up just on the across the border into the North Sami area with grandparents that were disconnected from, or well, I said disconnected. Everything was translated into Norwegian, and they did not carry a Sami identity, but they carried Sami traditions that were very important to me. So when I left home and met other people from the same area that had the same stories, and we all sort of had the same generational trauma. And when I saw who else carried the same stories and where they came from, and started realizing what my heritage actually includes. So I'm Sami from my father's family. My mother's side is Norwegian. So I grew up on the Norwegian side of Sapmi. I came back to Sapmi. I ended up thinking of it as a reintegration process, where it's very much that I have a right to learn, but the way I do it is sort of my responsibility. The problems and the traumas you've been giving it's unfair and it's painful, but you are the one who carry them, so you are the one who have to sort of figure out the way to go. And I end up having my transition or gender transition around the same time. To me, that just made sense, and it was also very important to me to, when I properly stepped back into like the Sami festivals and the Sami markets and all of the important meeting places, that I used a name that people could use for me over time, that they would get to know, the whole me. I am in Garmeres, which is a queer Sami organization. We have an official board on the Norwegian side, and then on the other side of the board is a bit more complicated, both with funding and like all of the structures you sort of have to manage. But our goal is to just better the situations for queer Samis on all sides of the borders, and making stronger connections to each other. So we do that through, you know, lobbying with politicians, we make meeting spaces, we have workshops, we just try to connect. I've also worked in the Norwegian Sami youth organization called Skeiv Ungdom, or Queer Youth, with having workshops with adolescents, is that, in between children and adults, which was very interesting. And around the same time, I was very active in, there was a terrorist attack in the Pride in Oslo. And after that period, I was very active in the work that came after, both with taking care of the people who were there and trying to make gathering places and sort of having sort of memorial concert or that also got cancelled, which is a whole, so I worked very hard right after that and have continuously tried to keep together the queer organizations, because there are lots of like history and discourse and everything, but when there is a crisis, we just have to make do. That's a bit about me. We'll probably stumble on some more stuff.
I could share a little bit about the work I do as the National Indigenous.
I love hearing you and listening to your stories and learning about you. I feel like we're building a strong friendship over these last couple of days here at this conference. One thing I forgot to mention that you had reminded me of is talking about my consultancy role at ARC Foundation with SOGI 123. So SOGI 123 was birthed in the province of British Columbia. It's now a national program in Canada. And it's one of the leading programs, non-for-profit programs, that's really trying to bring in SOGI inclusive education into the K-12 education system. And what SOGI means is this idea that everybody has a sexual orientation or a gender identity. So it's we're not calling it 2SLGBTQ+ education, because we're inclusive of heterosexual and different opposite sex relationships. So it's this idea that it's for everybody. And it's really about creating safer classrooms and spaces. And it's just really sad to see, you know, what's happening with legislation in Alberta and Saskatchewan and the 713 policy in New Brunswick, and just the anti-trans, anti-drag, anti-queer stuff that's happening around Canada. And so my job as the Indigenous Dialogues lead is to decolonize SOGI and really look at how are we approaching Indigenous communities in a way that we can break through this homophobia and transphobia that's been imposed by cultural genocide and residential schools, the 60s scoop, and all those different atrocious things and histories that have happened to our people. And how do we move beyond the homophobia and transphobia with leadership, like chief and councils, and you know, with the United Nations and with all these different barriers and governing bodies, for us to say, this isn't about grooming kids to become queer. This isn't about, you know, convincing people to be a part of the rainbow community. It's to celebrate diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I'm just really happy and fortunate to have that little plug in here in this space for other folks that are maybe listening to this. If you're an educator out there, know that that there are folks like myself and Jonas that are over in Sami Nation doing the work. Yeah. Masicho.
I love that. Thank you. You go ahead. Me and Terry look at each other like, you asked something. Well,
you're so much layered.
Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of questions I have too. And I'm again, I think just from the last couple, you know, days, just trying to process all the information and the immense knowledge that many of you carry. I want to ask you about your traditional wear. Yes. And so maybe if, and folks can't see this, obviously, maybe we'll take a picture and this picture will be part of when we upload this. But I think that if you can talk about your traditional wear and share with our listeners, and then you can follow up from that, Zachary.
Oh, I don't know where to start. Like, there are so many lines of stories that are connected to this specific garment and me. So I made this myself, and it's my gata. It's so the way I was told about the clothes we wear, the main function of it is to visually tell who you belong to. So this clearly states that I am masculine, because some of the colors, mostly the shape, but it also tells you that I where I'm from, like geographically, and it also says something about me in that I have some really old school elements that isn't really in fashion anymore, but I also made it in like a silk glittery brocades. I mean, purple, black, and sort of pink. Yeah, it's very queer. It's old school and it's new. Mm. Yeah, and I was very fortunate to learn from a queer elder, who is obviously Sami. And it was through a workshop that I contributed to making it happen. They had one on the Swedish side first, and we want to do one on the Norwegian side, and we will be continuing to do it because the space and the knowledge are so many things happening in it. It was magical. And it's a queer regalia. Or it ended up, when we applied for funding, we called it a non-binary workshop. And it... because that had been some like discussions and like panel discussion at the festivals and the different important spots where, okay, a lot of knowledge keepers were like, no, there are some rules. The rules tell you who you are. You know, some rules are definitely not to be broken. But the rules around gender, some of us felt that it wasn't necessarily... And it wasn't necessarily even about breaking rules. It's just combining what is already there in the visual language. So there were some discussions. They talked about it. And when we started talking about it practically, when we started talking about it in our own words, people started to understand. And then when people saw what we did, you know, you see it in your own language. So now it makes sense to a lot of people. Oh. Of course, some aren't there yet, but... most are. And I think that also comes from using the word non-binary, because non-binary, of course, it was a Norwegian word or a Swedish word, and they didn't understand the person. They understood the category, and the category, when it come from that sort of language, it was sort of this sort of function of othering. So you didn't see your cousin, you saw just some person on the outside of our communities. Hmm. So of course it was perceived as a threat to our traditions. But also the crafter, the doyer that we got to help us, she's lovely and she's crazy and I love her. Like she's my, she calls me her, or she calls all of us her godchildren. When we've been taught from her. So it was about sort of, okay, what is the old school approach? What is the way? And of course, a lot of the people who were in the workshop are reconnecting, being like, okay, but we need to do, there are some really important steps we need to do here, with like knowing who you are from, knowing something about them, their personalities, their, if we were able to find pictures of their regalia and sort of being like, okay, what is the continuous line from them to me? And of course, like myself, who didn't have pictures, be like, okay, what museums examples are interesting? What do we feel? The small details that says something about this person, what do you resonate with? So the first one I made, it's very clearly masculine-centered, but I used a very... So we wear cloth versions usually now. And in the very cold and especially like more old school practical, we had leather version and even fur versions as well. Hmm. And for the leather version in my area, the women also had collars. So I picked a leather collar because the collar is cloth. Mm-hmm. So that was red, very feminine. So I sort of reinterpreted the decorations and the colors on that one. And put it on a cloth, gabata. And also the woven band that is also quite gendered. I ended up talking more and more. Okay, how do I feel about myself, the people here, as I'm getting to know them? How do we view me? So the language we ended up using, like, I am a masculine-centered person who does some femininity. And that ended up being the way we viewed all of the information, all of the visual language we put in. So the woven bands at the bottom is very clearly a man, but it's got the rainbow in it. And the pink color is especially like important. It's the one in the middle, like it stands out extra. And I'm very happy that I got to learn so much. And I'm very happy for the space and the friendship I got from that workshop. And you know, in the position I have, I am able to try and make those sort of spaces happen for other people in smaller workshops, like with armbands and like, you know, shorter projects, but also the full regalia and sort of doing more gender bending. And we see a lot, not all of it is connected to even the queer organization. There's something about the, because we wear like big woolen shawls a lot. It's a very feminine symbol. It's a mother symbol. Mm-hmm. But more and more men are starting to use it. And I think for us, there's sort of a movement of the men's softness and feminism. And it's like, it's very clearly, if a man is wearing it, he might be gay, he might be a feminist. It's not necessarily that important. But he's very clearly appreciating femininity. Or at least that's the way I see it when I see somebody wearing it. So I'm really glad to be a part of that sort of pushing in that direction. I'm very happy that it's not only me as well, because it's a community. You can't really do a solo project, you know? Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Zachary, did you
want to
add something to that?
Sure, yeah, I can share. I think y'all should have some FOMO that are listening, because we're looking pretty deadly in this space right now.
I know.
And I'm thinking maybe we should get a group photo down at the Indigenous space and maybe use that as the cover or something. I don't know. Just throwing some ideas out there. I am wearing a traditional moose hide vest, a masculine moose hide vest, but it's not so traditional because it's a factory tan moose hide. And just a quick story there, I visited my reserve community every summer as a kid, and one thing that I noticed growing up, I'm a 90s kid, by the way, I was born in 1992 for context. So through the 90s and early 2000s until up to graduation, I used to notice a lot of our people in Treaty 8 territory doing moose hide tanning. And as an adult who has gone back to my community to be an educator in 2017, I noticed that there's quite a decline in traditional moose hide tanning, where we use the brain and we use all of the moose and all that stuff to bring out that really authentic smell and look. And so I was gifted this traditional vest by my late grandmother, Florence Michelle, Auntie Biz. But this was kind of a collaborative piece between two families, Adeline Dickey, so the Dickey family in Fort Nelson First Nation, as well as the Michelles. And so
Some of the beadwork over time, I've had this since my first graduation when I graduated from my Bachelor's of Arts degree with a double major in Anthropology and Indigenous Studies at Vancouver Island University in 2014. So it's been 10 years. It's been a decade. Holy! and the beading, some of it's fallen off, and I've redone the two top patches up on the top with help with my family members and my community for my master's graduation in 2023, which was last summer. And just a note on one thing that I as a kind of an off-reserve Indigenous person, if you will, if I want to use that label, or displaced Indigenous person, I just wanted to touch on the fact of this like idea of like for Indigenous folks that have this quote-unquote Indigenous privilege of being raised and kind of like knowing how to make the regalia. It's like to lighten up on the folks, us urban, you know, off-reserve people living in diaspora, because we really are trying to reclaim our culture and our languages. And as somebody who's gone home to learn what it means to be Dene, what does it mean to be a Dene person, a Dene Cree person, that's come with its traumas and its complexities that I won't get too much into, but it's this idea of like intersectionality, right? Is like there that we need to not assume people or judge people on their past, or you know, the family the family traumas that happen between different family names in our Indigenous communities. And how do we, as specifically as young Indigenous people across Turtle Island and beyond, over in the Arctic Circle and beyond, and in Siberia, is like, how do we come together and decolonize and kind of like move away from this hurt and come into this position of power for us to really like scratch each other's backs? Is like, how do we support each other in this reclamation of our Indigenous identity and culture and traditions? And so my life goal is I want to hunt my own moose. I want to skin my own moose. I want to do everything myself. And I do have some mentors in my community who are going to help me eventually on the trap line. But again, it comes down to time and capacity, energy. I want to make sure that these elders are paid well or gifted well and meaningfully for me to make my own moose hide jacket is what the goal is. So I'm like, I'm going to go a little bit deeper than the vest, maybe go all the way and do a jacket.
Full moose hide jumpsuit.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds really deadly. And another thing I just wanted to touch on was I have a as a two-spirit person, I have a desire to wear a moose hide shawl that women in our community typically wear. And I love the idea of gender bending and just doing it without permission. But I also am conscious of this. I do kind of want to touch base with maybe a few elders that I'm comfortable with, just to kind of get that like, hey, like what did people in the bush that were non-binary or use those pronouns, it and they, that I referred to in my introduction, like were they allowed to wear those shawls, or were quote unquote women allowed to wear moose hide vests and play hand games and drum and all those different things? And that's the thing, is like, I think a lot of our Indigenous peoples in Canada have been assimilated into the, you know, the Canadian Eurocentric body politic. And it's like, did Creator come down and teach us this binary? Like, did Sky Woman teach us this binary system, right? Like, where did these teachings come from? And, you know, it's not to dismiss, because I know the importance of women have traditions, men have traditions, and it's not to dismiss that, but it's to question, where is that space for gender non-binary people?
Thank you. I'll just say one quick thing, because what you both reminded me of is I teach in here at this institution, and I had an incredible guest lecturer come to my advanced practice with Indigenous Peoples class. And one of the things that my guest lecturer, Jeremy Albert, shout out Jeremy, brought in this article for our students to read, and I have since read it, and it's from Dr. Alex Wilson, and it's about queering Indigenous education. Mm-hmm. And what Jeremy really posed to our class was, first asked, think of binaries, right? And so we were like hot and cold, black and white, you know, all these binaries. And then Jeremy really challenged all of us to think about, where do these binaries come from? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Alex Wilson states is we really need to queer education and queer it in a way that it it stops us from thinking in binaries, constantly thinking in binaries, right? And where there's always this other space. There's always this other space. And so I just want, you both talked about, you know, just my now other thoughts around how often do I think in binaries? Because binaries are a colonial construct, right? And so, and I know that I can think in binaries all the time, because that's what we've been trained to do. And then me and Terry have, you know, been doing a lot of work with folks. And one of the things that I challenge our folks to think about is, in this binary world, there's things that are possible and things that are not possible. And I always think about how it's so important for us to be, there's all kinds of possibilities, right? And so I'm training myself to not think in binaries and live and exist in binaries. So thank you both for saying that. There's lots there for myself to unlearn and relearn. Mm-hmm. So thank you both for sharing that.
Because I keep having a thought of like, so a while ago I talked to one of my friends who grew up in, you know, a place where Sami is the majority language in that village. And we sort of talked about some of the sad parts of my family history and some of the hard stuff and the sort of loneliness when you are young, but you are the one in the family sort of pushing. And then she said, thank you for sharing. This is very interesting to me. And, you know, I haven't been colonized. So, and then I had to stop her, like, do you honestly think you are not colonized? It's okay to acknowledge the privilege you have. You know, you grew up so close to the community. You grew up with language, which for me, it's, you know, it's such a big barrier, you know, in the future somewhere. And I'm, you know, I'm so looking forward to learning. But it was so strange to me that, I mean, but this divide between the two of us, that is the exact way you and your village have been colonized. You have been sort of the connections and the borders and everything. We're so disconnected from each other. And that is not our idea. That wasn't our intention. And I also, when you talked about the binary of possible and not possible, because, I mean, we have a lot of rules with our regalia. And people are like, oh, you're the... regalia police and like all of these angry aunties and grandmas and off. Yeah, but my teacher, because I did a mistake. It's actually on this specific one. I've redone like the edging on the neck thing, and I met her for a festival and I'd been sewing a lot since last I saw her. So I showed her everything. I was like, oh, okay. And then she picked it up and she was like, And then she pointed to the color and I was like, what was your thought here? Because it was very clearly that I'd made a mistake. And then I started explaining what I had wanted to do. And like, and she's like, oh, okay. No, I think you should. And it was kind of a serious mistake. Like I had used a holy color too much. So it's quite a bad thing to do. But she was very much like, okay, I don't understand what you did here. How can I guide you to doing the right thing? And I think that's the interesting thing that, you know, when we are gender bending, when we are decolonizing, we need to sort of look back and see, okay, what is my intention? Is my intention in connection with, like, can I justify this against our tradition? And do I think it's healthy and good? And how do I translate that intention into a right thing? Because, I mean, it's a visual thing, so it's a visual language, and I used the wrong words. Like, so I just found a way to do that same intention, but I knew needed to use the visual language in a different way.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And so as we are wrapping up, time goes really fast when we're in great conversation. And so as we are wrapping up, I want to give both of you the opportunity to share any closing comments, if there's anything that you feel that our listeners should know about. So who would like to go first?
Yeah. Go.
I think to keep it short, I'll share the biggest golden nugget that I've learned in my 32 years on this planet is to try to learn to be with the things that, or try to be okay with the things that you cannot change or in control of. And to understand your sphere of influence
that you can make change every single day of your life, mm-hmm. but it's your choice to make that change. Mm-hmm. And really just in an invitation, if you will, because I don't want to tell people how to live their lives, but to pick up some books, to listen to other podcasts, to mm-hmm. educate yourself about not just queer culture, the 2SLGBTQ plus community, but the intersectionality of indigeneity and gender, yeah. Because gender is socially constructed and we know that sex is biological. Mm-hmm. And I think that I have my feeling, and I guess I'll close with this word, is nezu, which in my language means feeling good, is what I've been told, or good. And yeah, that's how my spirit is feeling right now. Mm-hmm. So Masi Cho for having me. I'm kind of starstruck that I'm here with y'all. And I'm looking forward to building a friendship and maybe even visiting your lands, yes. And vice versa. Oh, we're on.
Yeah, I think there is so many things. I think we are constantly moving forward. In Sápmi right now, I believe we are in a wave of revitalization. More and more people are finding their way back. Mm. And of course, there is so much pain in our communities. And I think there is so much mourning to be done. And that's sort of okay. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to sit with your feelings. But I also think it's so critical, especially when so many people are reconnecting and trying to figure stuff out, that you letting those things eat you up, and especially letting it eat others up, it's so destructive. Mm-hmm. It's destructive like nothing else. And I think the sort of medicine for a lot of the stuff is solidarity. Mm. We have lost, it seems we used to have some sort of sign language that we don't have anymore, to my knowledge. And then I'm like, okay, I will never be able to learn about that lost tradition. But I can be a very good, what's it in English? Disability justice, helper, ally. I can learn, I can see, okay, what are the good books about this? How do I translate this into my situation? The way racism affects me and also definitely doesn't affect me. How can I both mourn and have the hard feelings towards my family, but also make sure that I do not reproduce it, because I will. I mean, Samis are white, or we are white. We are BIPOC. We are also racialized. Mm-hmm. So it feels like we internalize racism as a racialized person, but we reproduce as a white person. Mm. So both the way you take in stuff, it's okay and it's complicated, but you need to take responsibility for the way you reproduce stuff. Hmm. I think mm-hmm. that was very strict.
Okay.
Yes, really. Oh my god.
Thank you. I want to thank you for that, because we know out here in our territory we do have those strict folks that will, hey, smarten up, get in line. We do that to each other.
Settle down.
We settle down. Hey, settle down. We're fucking around here. Yeah, or are you gonna find out? Thank you both so much. This was a very. I learned a lot. We learned a lot. And so thank you both very much for sharing who you are, a bit about your homelands and your community and your people. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Two Crees in a pod.
Two Crees in a pod.
Two Crees in a pod.
Natani Means.
Yeah.
Let's go. They pushed us to this point, frustrations of a common man. Manifested destiny, preach and pledge the promised land. I'm stuck between taking my journey, live with no honor. Like what's the use if my kids can't taste clean water? A child born into a world, revolution's not a choice. Fighting to be heard so we make them hear our voice. Remember ancestors' anguish lightning in our veins. Hear written a language when they are kitchen for the rain. I am product of people that persevere persecution. Paint me so creator sees me if I go out shooting. Experience our pain when our women disappear daily. Anxious to be angry, pacifists might hate me. Trolls on the internet constantly trying to bait me. We move in silence, cover of the night, learning from the wolves in the forest, tracking enemies in the woods. Reincarnations of warriors riding for salvation, or are we false prophets when we submit to temptation? Colonization is a hell of a drug. We all seem to go crazy when we fall in love. I said colonization is a hell of a drug. We all seem to go crazy when we fall in love. I said
Two Crees in a Pod.